The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Morning, Glory, America, rabbit, 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 June 1. I'm not there. I'm still reunioning, if that's a word. I think that's a word. And reunioning always means not doing the radio, but Generalissimo is here. We keep letting him do this because he keeps doing it pretty well. But we are a little bit worried about woke Dwayne, because Dwayne went to Disney this past weekend and is still talking about it. So I think he's been woke. We'll give him one shot. Take it away, woke Dwayne.
Thank you, Hugh. Yet another nickname that is not going to stick. It joins a long pile of nicknames that have not stuck. Generalissimo stuck. That was kind of the first one. Anyway, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Dwayne Patterson filling in for Hugh Hewitt today. He will be back on Monday. Ed Morrissey will be in tomorrow, but there is lots of news. We will get to it forthwith. Joining me later in the program will be Mary Catherine Hamm, and Josh Kroschauer of Axios will be joining us. Dr. Michael Oren will be joining us, hopefully from Israel, if the timing works there. And we have news. The news is the debt ceiling bill cleared its first major hurdle. It passed the House rather easily. And if you are a member of the Hughniverse, HUGHNIVERSE.com for subscribers, and listen to the Grand Old Pod and listen to my after show on Tuesday, I had a conversation with former Congressman John Campbell, who, if he were still in Congress, would probably be chair of financial services by now. But anyway, he knows a lot about these types of discussions and negotiations. We were having a conversation on Tuesday, and his prediction was that at the end of the day, when they finally held the vote, it really wouldn't be that close of a vote. And that's because it's an easy, safe vote for most of the representatives on either side to take. It's a bill where both sides can say, insert straw man here, and look, I saved you from what the other side was going to do. The other side was going to, here it points to that straw man, here's what they were going to take away from you. I saved it by voting for this thing. We saved that. We saved Social Security. We saved Medicare. We saved the military. We saved it doesn't matter what your position is. It's an easy vote to take and an easy vote to actually vote for, because the independents in this country like it when both sides kind of work together on something. The majority of the country actually likes it when Congress actually rolls their sleeves up and gets something done. It's going to go on to the Senate, and it will probably – there'll be some gnashing of teeth on both sides. Bernie Sanders has already come out against it. You heard Mike Lee, who didn't like it very much at all, on the Republican side. But it's going to pass. Mitch McConnell – was on the Senate floor in the hallway and had this statement after the House did their part. Cut number one.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Here we are. As you may recall, I said back in February that the way forward on the debt ceiling was for the Speaker and the President to sit down and discuss the matter. It took the president months to accept the reality that in divided government, in a debt ceiling situation, is the time for negotiation. In fact, 7 out of the last 10 debt ceilings have included other items. And now the drama is in the House. We anticipate the bill passing and coming over to us as soon as tomorrow. We had a healthy discussion at lunch about the pros and cons. I would say that most of my members who have objections would like to do more of the things that are already in the bill. I think Speaker McCarthy should be congratulated on capturing a number of priorities. And the best way to look at the difference, 2 years ago, we were in the process of spending $1.9 trillion. And then last year, another $750 billion. So we've gone from one party spending $2.7 trillion in 2 years to a discussion about actually reducing government spending. So I think the American people's decision to change the House has already yielded benefits for our country.
Look, just objectively, the deal that got passed out of the House, is it the best deal ever? Of course not. Would it be better if we had both chambers? Yes. Would it be even better if we had the presidency? Of course. Is it better than going over the fiscal cliff and defaulting? No. I mean, it's better than defaulting, right? Is it better than a clean debt ceiling and just giving the Democrats everything they want and caving? Of course it's better than that. If you are the type that wants to say, there's no difference between the parties, it's just one big happy family, they all want to spend money and nothing's changed, and you're just bitter. Here's what I would tell you. Quantity, it has a quality all of its own. If you really want the Freedom Caucus to have the majority of the Congress, then vote them in. Work harder to vote them in. Get some Freedom Caucus members from northeastern states. Expand their range from where they're currently at in different regions of the country. There are ways to do that. There are ways to strengthen numbers in the Senate. Primarily, it would be having candidates that can actually win statewide races. It's really simple. You have to win elections to be able to steer the agenda and control how things go. If you don't, then you're not going to really have the say-so you want, and you can't just take your ball and go home. And if you think that it's, you know, the Republicans got steamrolled, they got totally rolled. Here's Ro Khanna, not exactly a conservative, on MSNBC, not exactly a conservative place. Here's what he thought happened. Cut three.
Onto the debt ceiling, though. Look, I think the Republicans took this president hostage. This president did the absolute best he could under the circumstance. The deal could have been much worse. But there are many Democrats who do not want to reward the Republicans running roughshod over the Constitution. Hakeem Jeffries has said that we will provide enough votes so that the deal passes and it does not default. But some of us are going to vote no on principle. We don't believe that you should be taking away food assistance from the most vulnerable when we have an affordability crisis, that you should be hurting people who are student loan borrowers. And we know that there are options, as Larry Summers has said, Paul Krugman has said, where the president can pay the debts that Congress has authorized him to pay, and that this should never happen again.
Yeah, so Congressman, so you've said that the president did the best he could do under the circumstances. I've heard some people come over here and say he should have never negotiated. That wasn't really an option because, well, unfortunately, Democrats in New York State and in other states don't know how to redistrict in a way that passes constitutional muster. And so Democrats lost the House. So this, our very system requires these negotiations. So, again, I just want to circle back and have you underline that fact again. Joe Biden had no choice. He had to negotiate. And this is, you say, the best deal he could have gotten. Why do you say that?
Well, look, the deal is much better than 10 years ago. I mean, it could have been much worse. It could have been 10 years of spending freezes. It was only 2 years. He managed to get some of the veterans, homelessness, some of the food assistance. That was something that he negotiated. And he held back against drastic cuts. Now, I believe that there are options, especially in the future, as the president has said, where we shouldn't have this debt ceiling.
Okay, let's stop there. Yeah, there's options. And you know what the Democrats think the options are? Honestly, they think winning elections. If, depending on who the Republican nominee is, if they win the next election, then they've got options again. They can turn around and spend whatever they want to spend if they've got the numbers. If the Republicans won options, maybe they should win elections too. Put in candidates that can win in either congressional districts that they haven't won in a while or statewide. And once you put those people in, then your negotiating room has a lot more upside, doesn't it? Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt. We got lots more in the news to talk about. Stick around for the Thursday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show. The difference you can make in a kid's life. We have done this campaign every year for I don't know how many years, and every year you guys in the audience come through and bless a bunch of kids that have parents, either one or two parents, that are incarcerated. These are potentially at-risk kids. Let's talk to Darren Edwards of United Believers Community Church in Kansas City as to what this ministry is all about.
Well, one of the things I will share with those of you who are contemplating, should I share? Should I give my resources? I know things are tight, inflation is high, and you're making decisions on what to do and how to do. There's no better way to invest in the life of a child. That you're becoming the hands and the feet of Jesus the moment you make that donation to support Angel Tree Camps. So I hope you will, and I pray you will.
I hope you will, and I pray you will as well. $200 is what will send one kid to camp. And as you know, with Christian camps, a week at camp can make all the difference in the world to a kid at this stage of their life. $200 or even any donation can be pooled with somebody else's donation, and eventually it will get a kid to camp. If you would just please go to HughHewitt.com, click on the Angel Tree Camp banner at the top, let it load. It'll take a second for that banner to load on the page. Or you can phone it in to 888-206-2764. That's 888-206-2764. But the easiest way is to click on the Angel Tree Camp banner at the top of HughHewitt.com. Welcome back, America. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt today. Very pleased to be joined by Dr. Michael Oren, a dear, dear friend of the show and of me. Former diplomat, deputy prime minister for diplomacy for the State of Israel, and author of many great books and a keen observer of what goes on in that part of the world. Michael, great to have you here. Thanks for coming on.
Always good to be with you, Dwayne. Hello.
I've got three stories, and I'm going to just kind of run all three by you, and you take them in whichever order you want. Number one, Hungary is to become the first European Union country to move their embassy to Jerusalem, which I thought was kind of interesting. Second story, UN watchdog, the IAEA, is apparently no longer concerned about 87.3% uranium enrichment in Iran and has closed down their questioning, their investigation, one of those probes that was prompted by Israel. I think that's a very ominous sign. And the third story, this is kind of a breaking thing out of the Times of Israel. Coalition claims imminent understandings in judicial talks. The opposition disagrees. Hebrew media runs a leaked document of general principles coming out of the president's residence negotiations. Yet opposition denies having received it, says no agreement reached. Now, I don't know if this is a story that's a headline in search of a story because they're looking for filler or if there's actually something going on. But Dr. Oren, I gave you domestic. I gave you foreign policy. Take them in whichever order you want.
Let's start with the third one. It's not a headline in search of a story, but it's definitely a spin in search of a newspaper.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, the coalition says we're on the verge of an agreement under the aegis of President Herzog, a compromise agreement on the judicial reform. The opposition denies it. There's no such agreement. What's going on here? What's going on here, to my mind, is the already rising dissension within the Likud party and the coalition. The sense that Netanyahu will not follow through on his promises on the judicial reform. He was asked yesterday at the Knesset, what's the major issue facing the coalition today? He didn't mention judicial reform. He mentioned the cost of living and the cost of housing, and which got the justice minister, Yariv Levine, who is the champion of this judicial reform, got him like steaming mad in this talk that he may resign. He's very, very powerful within the Likud. He's a threat to Netanyahu, and I think that this is a spin, an attempt to sort of prepare the ground for the possibility of compromise on the judicial reform. That's par for the course for politics generally, certainly with Israeli politics. When you read an article like that, you always have to say, okay, whose interest is this serving? And that's my take on that.
Right.
The Hungarians moving their embassy to Jerusalem is terrific. It's a great moment. I would rather see a Western liberal European country move their embassy. Hungary, of course, is rather Eastern European and is an illiberal democracy under Mr. Orban. That move will not impress anybody in Western Europe and certainly not under the current administration in Washington. Thirdly, I think most significantly is what's going on with the IEA.
Agreed.
And the reports now that the United States is renewing its efforts to reach a nuclear agreement with Iran. That was the major headline here yesterday. And that is, of course, a source of deep, deep concern.
It would be a disaster.
It would be a disaster. We believe not just for Israel and the Middle East, but for the world. And, I was never confident that the Biden administration had given up on its quest to reach a nuclear deal with Iran. Many people thought that this was dead and buried. I did not. And it's back. It's back. You know, it's like that hand at the end of Fatal Contraction. Just so you think it's buried, it comes up.
Yes.
And this,
as the Washington Post reports this morning, that Iran plans to escalate attacks against U.S. troops in Syria. It's a covert plan to kill Americans seen as part of a larger Russian-backed strategy to oust the United States from Syria. We are not going to get what we think we're going to get by giving a bunch of money and bailing out the Iranians.
But what you're going to get is more terror because they're going to finance more terror.
Absolutely.
That happened in 2015. On the contrary, the Iranians have concluded that the higher you ratchet up the pressure on these policymakers in Washington, the more they'll concede. Whereas it should, of course, be just the opposite. So, of course, they're linked. The rumors of a possible renewed JCPOA and of a resurgent Iranian attempt to oust the United States from Syria are deeply linked, of course. And from the Iranian perspective, it makes perfect sense. The IAEA conclusion to drop the investigations of these two suspected sites. And remember, this result was the result of our wonderful, extraordinary operation by the Mossad in removing a nuclear arsenal from nuclear archives from Tehran in 2018. And we got information about these two sites. We passed it on to the IAEA, and the Iranians refused to let inspectors in. And that's proved to be one of the major obstacles to renewing the JCPOA. The United States wouldn't back down from the demand, and the Iranians wouldn't back down from theirs regarding these two sites. Now the IAEA, to my mind, kind of mysteriously, kind of suspiciously, all of a sudden dropping their investigation, that's opened the door to renewed talks on the JCPOA.
It's very ominous, very disturbing, and very ominous. We will follow that very closely with Michael next week when he comes on. Michael Oren, you should read everything he writes, michaeloren.com. You can read him on Twitter, @DR, Michael Oren, O-R-E-N. Michael, thank you very much. Talk to you next week. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt. We're coming back right after the top of the hour break with Mary Catherine Hamm. Stick around. Hey, everybody. It's Dwayne Patterson of the Hugh Hewitt Show. The last time we talked, I was about 3 weeks into a 50-pound weight loss project with my PhD, weightloss.com. I had lost 16 pounds after 3 weeks. Today, I've lost 50 pounds in just 12 weeks and have been able to keep it off for the last 2 months. And you can, too. MyPhDWeightLoss.com has all the information, or 864-644-1900. Mary Catherine Hamm, America's sweetheart. You know her, you love her, you see her on TV, you read her, you listen to her podcast that she co-hosts, Getting Hammered. She is the Hamm of the Getting Hammered. Hello, Mary. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Duane.
So let's get you on the GPS of total freak out, or this is what it was going to be, and we all knew this. Where are you in the scale of the debt ceiling passing the House by 314 votes?
I'm basically fine with it, slash sort of surprised that it went semi-smoothly. Okay, here's the deal. The problem for everyone is that we are fighting on Speaker McCarthy's turf, which is more conservative, right? But we're still in fighting on insane turf when it comes to fiscal sanity, right? There is none. We were at a level inflated by COVID years and Biden craziness that clawing back anything is good, but it also feels very unsatisfying. And I think this is where we were going to end up. I think he played a bad hand, not terribly. And I think Biden's, you know, cope has been And the lefties have been like, oh, I can't believe we gave all this up. So like there are real things here, including shout out to Thomas Massie's idea that we might actually go back to regular order on budgeting,
right,
which is a very unsexy thing, but I think actually is not a terrible pitch to voters to say like, hey, we keep getting ourselves into these last minute situations. Maybe there's a different way to do it. Oh, wait, there is. We've just been ignoring it. So I like that idea and I think it could help.
John Campbell was on a podcast with me on Tuesday, and we had kind of set the bar at 300 as to what the over-under was of how many votes it would end up getting. Because Democrats and Republicans, with the majority of Americans, not just pundits and people like us that follow this stuff all the time, most people don't want to be bothered with it. Just get this done and so we can move on with our lives, right?
Exactly.
So it's an easy vote for them to take and say yes.
Well, yeah, because, look, compromise doesn't feel great to me or someone else who's ideological or someone else who's very interested in getting back to, like, a sane baseline in on fiscal stuff or, like, dealing with entitlements, right?
Right.
I get that. I feel that. However, you know who really does like compromise? A lot of American voters. And they like to see things functioning. And I think since Kevin McCarthy has been speaker, post-speaker vote, which didn't seem that functional, things have moved along,
yep,
right? He has gotten things done that I've been surprised by. And that is a good message to voters.
Totally agree with you.
The thing function, and it's not Biden who's making it function.
Okay, so do you have any guesses what it's going to do in the Senate? I think it's not going to be that tough of a sled in the Senate either. You're going to have Bernie Sanders make noise. You'll have Mike Lee, some Republicans make noise. It's still going to clear 65 votes, right?
I agree that it will be. This is sort of a fait accompli, would be my guess. And you know, I was asked on Hannity last night if the conservatives in the House were going to vacate speaker and be mad at this. And I think this is the kind of thing that you're mad about for a little while, but you live to fight another day. And that, frankly, the anger is not sustainable for very long.
Okay. Now I want to move to the fun stuff. And this is something that you are probably one of the few people that are in kind of my line of work that will appreciate this and can actually give a fair grade. You're the mom of smalls. This is now, This is now June. We're getting into grade season for some of the smalls. Yes?
Right.
Okay. So I want you to grade, even though it's early, even though not everybody's in yet. Mike Pence is allegedly getting in next week. Chris Christie's going to get in next week. Chris Sununu is supposed to get in sometime in June. The break glass in case of emergency candidate for November may be Glenn Youngkin. Who knows? But based on the finite universe of GOP candidates that we know of right now, I want you to grade not how the campaign is going, not how the candidate talks. I want you to grade their comms shop, okay? Their comms team. Because that's what I see. That's my own little universe behind the scenes that I have to deal with all the time. Who's got the best rapid response team? Who's got the best online presence? Who puts their principle out better for media consumption, earned media consumption? So let's start with Vivek Ramaswamy. What would you grade their comm shop?
Actually, like I feel like he's like maybe a B- or something. He gets a lot of ink for a guy who is not a very conventional candidate. And and I think that part on its own is fairly impressive.
Okay. Nikki Haley.
Nikki Haley. Oh, this one, I feel like I like Nikki Haley, and I feel like they've lost their way a bit on message, and it just feels like it's all over the map. So I'm giving that a C.
Okay. Tim Scott.
Tim Scott. Oh, B for Tim Scott, because this is the thing. It's construct versus principle. The principle is very good with message. So I think that's their strength, but they know that's their strength. And he's been relentlessly positive, as he is. I don't know what it'll get him in the actual polls, but the message feels good.
Asa Hutchinson.
I haven't heard anything except for his name, so I'm going to give that one a C minus, a D.
Okay. And what about Donald Trump?
Like, particularly this week, I got to grade him down. Like, we're talking, this is a trigger for me. So let me put my cards on the table.
Okay.
Appealing to the idea that Cuomo handled COVID well does not spark joy for me. So I got to give a D this week, because that is anathema to pretty much everything I've experienced for the last 3 years. And it doesn't lead us to a reckoning on COVID, which I very much would like to see. And I think lining up against, making a criticism of DeSantis is one thing. Lining up with Cuomo or whatever corporation of the moment, I don't think is the way to do that. I think that's it's a bad move both for policy and for voters.
Again, my metrics are getting out the principal's message, yes, even if it's the principal himself doing it, but getting out the principal's message. It is rapid response to attacks from either other Republicans, right, or other Democrats, but rapid response, and getting earned media, you know, getting.
Well, so I think Trump, well, he's getting some earned media. I believe tomorrow he's got a town hall on Fox.
I think Hannity's doing that, right?
Right, exactly. So, you know, there's that, and he'll probably do well in that arena. I think the issue for the comms shop for Trump is that Trump is the message, right? And, like, as you saw from the press release last night that went out about Rob DeSanctimonious about changing his name and using DeSantis instead of DeSantis.
Can you explain that, by the way?
Look, I don't know. Is there a reason he calls him Rob? Is he just joking that he doesn't even know who he is? What is the I don't get the nickname.
I can usually try to figure out what he's trying to do.
Right,
the DeSantis thing I thought was hysterical, because, you know, DeSantis actually does translate from the original Latin.
Right.
Of the like, saints.
Do we think that he knew that?
No, of course he didn't. Right? There's no way he knew that.
No.
Okay, so you give him a D this week.
Yeah, because I just feel like you're lining up on the wrong side of the ball, right? And then you're also, his comm shop is not able to funnel his message or revise his message about DeSantis in any sort of constructive way, as we saw, I think, from that press.
Now, how do you think Kayleigh McEnany, who used to be his comm shop,
Speaking of lining up on the wrong side of the ball, one of the best communications people he ever had, Kayleigh, I worked with her at CNN. She's one of the few people there who stuck up for him in 2016, who knew he would win, by the way.
Outside of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, maybe the best messenger he had.
Yes, and got no plaudits for being correct about that entire election when everyone else was wrong,
right?
Because it was CNN. But she's been there for the long haul. She's very good. She's extremely prepared, even when he's giving her not much to work with, a la, I don't know, arguing over the way you just pronounced DeSantis. She makes it look better, right? That's what you want in a comms person. And now she's under the bus because she's giving a fair assessment of him versus DeSantis and refuses to hate the governor of her very successful state.
Okay,
like
back to the
look.
Before we run out of time, back to the report card, Ron DeSantis.
Yeah. Ron DeSantis this week, I have B plus to A. I mean, I think getting him in front of, like, last week, the Twitter thing didn't go smoothly. Getting him in front of a giant American flag in Iowa and telling people that they're going to protect kids from places that are trying to take away their innocence, and saying, look, all the Trump family moved to Florida, so it can't be so bad, huh? These are good lines, and they're not heavy with statistics, which is something I worry about with DeSantis, because he knows so many things.
Right.
I think it was a good look.
I just think their rapid response is awfully darn impressive right now.
Yes.
They come hard with receipts.
Yep.
Anyway, thanks, Mary. I appreciate it. We will touch base with you next week on whatever the news is there. Make sure you check out the Getting Hammered podcast. You should be listening to that all the time. It is a fun, fun podcast. Mary, thank you very much.
For all of you book lovers out there, I've got exciting news. A gripping new novel from Berkeley Books just hit the shelves. Dead Drop by M.P. Woodward. If you ever wondered how Mossad, the CIA, a politically divided U.S. administration would react to Iran getting a nuke, then Dead Drop is a must-read. With true-to-life trade craft from a former intel officer, Dead Drop pits spy against spy. Get Dead Drop now wherever you buy books and listen to my interview with M.P. Woodward on my podcast. Thanks.
Home stretch of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh. One segment left. We fill it with Josh Krushauer, the senior political correspondent for Axios.com, a good friend of ours. Josh, welcome. Good to have you here. Here's my premise. I've got a column that's going to appear at Hot Air's VIP section later today that looks at the different GOP campaigns' press apparatus. And look, you're in my world, too. I mean, that's who we deal with in the campaigns is the press shop, right? The comms department. And my premise is this isn't the final exam. This isn't even the midterm, but this is like a chapter test. But you can tell the health of a campaign based upon what kind of a comm shop they have. And the metric I use is how well they get their principal's message out and how well they counterpunch when they start getting slings and arrows. Do you agree kind of with the premise?
Yeah, I mean, look, communications is an essential element of every campaign, presidential on down. And you've got, this is the big league, Dwayne, and you've got some of the top Republican communicators with all the leading campaigns. Now, I would, you know, the most improved award I would give to the Trump operation because I, other than Trump himself, and I guess you have to put a big asterisk by Trump because his Truth Social posts, which often drive coverage, are not on message and don't help the campaign most of the time.
Well, the DeSantis bit, the Kayleigh McEnany hit job. I mean, I don't know what message that's driving forward.
Right. Well, with Trump, you've got to delineate, and maybe you can't, the Truth Social posts, which do not help. I mean, it's good that Trump's not on Twitter itself because oftentimes people don't even know that Trump is posting on Truth Social. But that is very counterproductive for Trump. But the operation itself, I think, we wrote a story at Axios a few weeks ago about how surprised we were about the effectiveness of the press operation with the former president. But DeSantis has a lot of pros, a lot of really talented people that are really, especially this week, Dwayne, in Iowa, driving the message, driving a contrast with the former president. I've been noticing, and I'm very online myself, so I see
Did you see just the bus thing in Cedar Rapids last night?
I did. The back and forth between Stephen Chung with the Trump campaign.
And I mean that DeSantis meme trying to say that DeSantis' bus broke down, that lasted for about 3 minutes before Christina Pushaw just destroyed it, right?
Well, so here with DeSantis, they have an excellent – well, they have a very, very talented rapid response.
Yeah.
Have
for a week-old campaign, they're in mid-season form.
Christina Pushaw is a very, you know, as you know, sort of a polarizing figure. Certainly, she often targets, like, mainstream media reporters with her Twitter jabs. Now she's training her fire onto the Trump campaign. And I think it's been effective. It's creating quite a bit of a feud, as you noted, Dwayne, between some of the leading operatives in Trump world and certainly between Christina Pushaw on the DeSantis side.
Do you think that's going to have a factor in how Iowans view this going between now and the first round of debates? How important is the comm shop to Iowans?
Well, look, ultimately, it's whether the principal, the candidate themselves, can drive their own message effectively. I think there were signs of DeSantis being able to do that in this Iowa trip. He's starting to step up some of the contrasts against Trump. I thought there was a great line he had about the Trump family moving to Florida because they actually like his governance and handling of COVID. That was a smart line. I think he should probably incorporate that into a stump speech. So they're getting into, as you said, full midseason form. I think there was a lot of feedback I read in the coverage of DeSantis' trip that voters, attendees really like the message, like the record that DeSantis has in Florida. You know, there's some questions about his so-called oratory, his charisma. I think he has some work to do on that front. And Trump, look, Trump is the guy who gets the rallies, sure. and can single-handedly drive a message and drive a crowd.
Let me shift to one other metric while we've got about a minute left. The metric of ground game versus air war. Trump seems to be adopting the same air campaign he did in 2016 that was very successful. The 2020 air campaign that did drive out a record number of votes for him, but also a record number of votes against him. But he seems to be doing pretty much an air campaign here, whereas DeSantis, the Never Back Down pack, they've knocked on 50,000 doors in Iowa in a week. Is that going to have an impact? Does that mean anything to you?
You know, I always like to say about the ground game, there's always some spin from any campaign, no matter what party, no matter what side. And it's hard to kind of almost check the metrics, right? It's sort of a very subjective figure at times. Look, I think the big thing with DeSantis' ground game, a lot of it is being done through the super PAC, through the well-funded allied super PAC that is going to be playing a lot of ads, going to be doing a lot of things for the, you know, to help DeSantis out. Traditionally that's done through the campaign. And I think the big test is whether an outside group can effectively get that ground game going. There can be some logistical challenges when you don't have the campaign being able to communicate and coordinate with the super PAC. And yet a lot of the ground game efforts seem to be going through the super PAC and Jeff Rowe and a lot of the big names.
Are you going to do any kind of an analysis piece on that in the coming days and weeks?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, we're going to have reporters, you know, like that is what reporting is, like getting a sense of what's happening on the ground. And in Iowa, which is going to be the big thing.
Yep. Josh, we will read you, as always, in Axios.com. Thank you very much for being here. That's it for me. Ed Morrissey of Hot Air will be sitting in the big chair tomorrow. I'll probably kind of hang out with him. But Ed Morrissey's going to drive the car for the 3 hours. Thanks for being here. Check out my column at Hot Air later today. And check out Ed Morrissey tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody. See ya.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.